Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
There are a lot of unanswered questions about the death of Usama Rahim, who he was, and what motivated him. But here are some clues that interest anti-terrorism officials. Several media outlets, including the New York Times, cite unnamed law enforcement sources who say Rahim was radicalized by militant Islamic social media sites. The Boston Globe cites sources that say on Facebook accounts linked to Rahim, he had liked the Islamic State, as well as a well-known advocate of violent Islamist ideology. And here's Congressman Michael McCaul of Texas speaking yesterday at a congressional hearing about Rahim.
I was being investigated by the Boston Joint Terrorism Task Force after communicating with and spreading ISIS propaganda online.
To talk more about the role of social media in all this, we're joined by Bruce Hoffman. He's director of the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University. And Professor Hoffman, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
In general, how is social media being used to influence people to join terrorist groups like ISIS or to plan violent attacks?
Unfortunately, I think social media has had a transformative effect on terrorist recruitment and radicalization in the sense that it's free, it's ubiquitous, it's timely, and what we're seeing more and more, they are often getting their hook into someone or making contact with someone and then tailorizing, customizing, sculpting the message in such a way that they hope will serve to not just radicalize them, but to motivate, inspire, and then animate them to commit acts of violence.
There's so much, obviously, that we still don't know about Usama Rahim and this case up here in Boston, but does this look like a case that would fit into that pattern of ISIS recruitment?
It's too soon to say, but it does have, for instance, some parallels to the Garland, Texas shooting case where Elton Simpson, who was one of the gunmen, similarly had been on social media, had been communicating with ISIS. We know for certain what can be said is that ISIS is actively pursuing a strategy of radicalization and of inspiration and motivation and ultimately animation to carry out terrorist attacks deliberately in what they view as the quote-unquote enemy's homeland. This has been going on since at least last September when Abu Mohammed Adnani, who's ISIS's chief spokesperson, basically called on Muslims worldwide to join ISIS's struggle and said, look, you don't have to necessarily come to Syria or come to Iraq to fight. You can fight in your homelands, and actively encouraged that sort of response. So what we're seeing now, I think, is the series of muscle movements in the month since then, inundated with ISIS propaganda from social media, from other sources, that potentially this is yet another indication of individuals in the United States, as they have done elsewhere in the West, responding to these clarion calls to battle, in essence, to engage in acts of terrorism.
Mm. It seems like, thinking about the case of Usama Rahim, though, that this kind of case poses a tough challenge for law enforcement, because I can imagine that there might be someone, perhaps someone like Rahim, who is sympathetic to ISIS, who puts out information online, but who would stop short of actually becoming a fighter or a lone wolf. So how do you know when someone has crossed that line from ideologue to actually preparing to take action?
That's exactly right, and especially in the United States, given our constitutional freedoms and safeguards, there's a very fine line between someone having extremist views and then crossing that line and not necessarily even engaging in an act of violence that's terrorism, but plotting or planning or conspiring to engage in such violence. And this is, I think, why the authorities that we've given to the FBI and other law enforcement as part of the Electronic Communications Privacy Act and the Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act, which, in other words, give law enforcement the ability, as at least newspaper and media accounts suggest was in this case, to listen in on people that are plotting and planning and conspiring to commit terrorist attacks.
Do you feel that the strategy for combating potential lone wolf actors in the U.S. is adequate? I mean, does law enforcement have it under control?
It's interesting that this incident occurs the same week, of course, that the Senate voted to, put some restrictions at least on, metadata collection and sifting through phone records. We don't know yet how Usama Rahim came to the attention of law enforcement. Hmm. I think there's always a balance to be struck between preserving the fundamental liberties and civil rights that make the United States the great country it is, but also giving law enforcement and intelligence the tools that they need to safeguard the country. And I think this is an issue that is going to just really constantly recur, because what's so dangerous, I find, about social media and especially ISIS's exploitation of it is, as I said earlier, they're customizing or tailoring the message to sort of get their hooks into specific individuals. So therefore, law enforcement and the intelligence community's ability to intercept these plots as they're formulating, as they're germinating, as they're being discussed is absolutely imperative if we're going to prevent tragedies, such as at least media reports suggest in this case, which was, you know, to kidnap individuals and start beheading them. Yeah. And again, that is exactly a specific instruction that ISIS has issued to its would-be or actual followers who they're attempting to communicate with throughout the globe.
Yeah. As someone who follows these issues closely, I'm curious to know, you know, what's the biggest question that you're eager to have answered as this particular story unfolds?
Well, the biggest question for me, given the activities in Congress in the past few weeks over the USA Freedom Act is, you know, how did law enforcement or the intelligence community first learn about Osama Rahim and uncover these plots? Mm-hmm. I think the second important question is, to what extent was ISIS specifically targeting an individual like Rahim, or was it more spontaneous or serendipitous? I mean, we just don't know that. You know, liking ISIS on Facebook is not necessarily certainly illegal, but that may be one of the indications that ISIS uses to find someone that they believe may be somewhat sympathetic. So again, because we're at really a new era in terrorist radicalization and recruitment, the Rahim case, I think, just provides yet more information in filling out the story of what has become, I think, unfortunately, a much more commonplace and emergent terrorist means of radicalization and recruitment.
All right. Well, that's Bruce Hoffman. He's the director of the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University. Professor Hoffman, thank you so much.
Again, you're very welcome.
There's more of the show in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.